The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Now, let's go to some of the stories that have been trending all week on social media. And there's no doubt that the week started with the story of the Dubai Two. Two young Dublin women, well, aged 25 and 30, who had headed off to Dubai and then had trouble getting back into the country. And when they did get back to Dublin, were required to go for their mandatory quarantine in a specially designated hotel. But they refused to do so, saying they couldn't afford the costs that would have been involved. And they ended up then in the courts. Now, they seem to be back in mandatory quarantine at this stage, but they will be taking a legal challenge against the constitutionality of our country's mandatory quarantine regime. Dave Hanratty, journalist and host of the No Encore podcast. What did you make of this saga during the week?
It's quite the tricky story, Matt, isn't it? I mean, ultimately, we are in a time now when we talked recently about how public attitudes towards everything in the country has hit a bit of a wall. I think this wall is now bigger and a bit more reinforced. So any kind of case of anybody, you know, breaking quarantine or kind of flouting the rules is going to be something that will definitely get the public's ire up. And in this one in particular, I mean, like, look, it's a story in which two young people have gone off to Dubai for cosmetic surgery, which they didn't end up having, but that is the headline. It's going to upset a lot of people, and that's fair enough. But I think at the same time, there's a lot more going on. And I think, you know, it's hard to kind of look beyond, say, some of the government decisions that have been made and some of the incompetence that you might see there. And of course, some private bodies essentially kind of playing by their own rules and kind of at a time when we need to be united as a country. A story like this one, I can completely understand why it would upset people. It's certainly nothing to be celebrated or applauded, but I can't help but feel a bit sorry for the people involved, which I know, I mean, might upset even some of your listeners hearing me say that.
Explain why you feel sorry for them.
I just think, like, kind of making front page headlines out of this, like, it's kind of an easy layup, right? It's kind of an easy story to be like, let's pick two individuals who are kind of, you know, just normal people off the street and essentially demonize them, like, if you will. Like I say, the behavior is not to be applauded, not to be celebrated. They did break rules. It isn't good. It does send the wrong message. And it's not something that you want to see, especially if you have been COVID compliant, you know, all this way through. It is a slap in the face. So that's difficult. But at the same time, like I say, I wonder if the public anger should be focused at state bodies and kind of, you know, where we are lagging behind. Now, I know at the moment we're kind of, things appear to be improving, and God, I hope that they are. However, with this, I mean, it's tricky. Like it's just, it's very difficult. If it was anybody in this position who I knew, or if it was myself, it's very hard to come back from. Like I say, people are furious, and I understand that fury, but I just wonder if maybe somewhere along the way we've maybe lost sight of, you know, what we really should be angry at.
Okay, Caitlin McBride is with us as well. Do you feel sympathy for these two women?
I do. I actually agree with what Dave was saying with regards to the outlet of people's fury and anger that has built up over the last year. What I don't like about the coverage of this case is the fervor with which it has been covered in you know, newspapers everywhere. I mean, even this name, you know, the Dubai Two, kind of, you know, as I say, I think it's catnip for certain types of publications, and I think it's catnip for a country which is understandably angry. And I would again kind of echo with what Dave was saying with regards to where people should be placing their anger. I think that I'm not saying that this is, again, something that should be celebrated, and, you know, the courts will decide ultimately a decision that will be made. However, in the interim, the way that these women have been represented throughout, and I think even the fact that, you know, we're constantly seeing it's, you know, a mother and this kind of, it's a way that women are usually represented in these types of cases, especially with regards to, you know, breast enhancement surgery and Dubai, which has become a lightning rod, of course, for, you know, travel, illicit travel and COVID, so to say. And it's a way that women usually are described in a way that men aren't, and that has made me uncomfortable with the way that this story has played out in recent days.
But hold on a second, Caitlin. I mean, they brought up the issue of this cosmetic surgery mm-hmm. in the court. Then it turns out, I mean, there's a lot of people suspicious. Could this be something similar to all of those people who are supposed to be going for dental appointments in Tenerife, which was such a major issue before Christmas, that this is another excuse given for what is essentially a holiday? And when everybody else is not going for holidays, why should we have any time for somebody who goes on a holiday and then coming back refuses to adhere to the same criteria that applies to everybody else coming into the country?
Absolutely. And there is, I mean, it's wrong, you know, and I think if you have been COVID compliant and you shouldn't be traveling at a time like this, and you shouldn't, and I completely agree with you with the way that you're saying, what my issue is the kind, as I said, kind of the fervor with which it's been covered. And it's almost taking pleasure in these two women appearing before the court. I don't agree with anything that they did, but I have noticed a shift in the coverage that makes me uncomfortable as a reader.
Okay. People saying that it took other things such as the Beacon Hospital and the Davy stockbroker scandal off the front pages. But I would say, Dave, those issues have been covered in enormous detail, enormous depth. And this is the very first time, for example, that we're even mentioning the Dubai 2 as such on this programme. And it's because we're just sort of looking at the stories that have been in the public eye during the week.
No, that is totally fair. I mean, like it's not a situation that it has completely buried other news agendas. It has been a busy news week, like in general across the board, I think. And it's not necessarily a smokescreen, but it is a distraction. And I think Caitlin makes a good point. Like even the phrase, the Dubai 2, is very tabloidy. It's a very tabloid kind of story, and it's fodder. It's grist for that mill. And I think there absolutely are classist and misogynistic implications to look at,
but
here.
Dave, the only reason I'm using it is because I'm not naming the two women. Now, I could name the two women instead of calling them the Dubai 2.
No, that's fair. Like absolutely correct. But I think that there are, like, it is kind of like, it's snappy, right? I mean, it's kind of something you could put into a hashtag. It's very easy to just kind of, like, take the humanity off it. But yeah, there are legal implications here as well. So you got to be careful. That's fair enough. And yeah, listen, I mean, like, it's not that people are suddenly not mad at the government or suddenly not mad at the Beacon Hospital. It's kind of a coalescing of things. And I just think in this situation, like, there is a fervor. I think Caitlin is right. I think it's a case of trying to manage this. It's completely wrong as well, to echo what Caitlin said there as well. This is not good behavior. This is irresponsible behavior. They will be prosecuted. It's also a situation where this was kind of probably always going to happen to some degree. Like when this new law came in, obviously we think and hope it'll be temporary to some degree, but you have to wonder what kind of, you know, like lawyers will look to challenge this. There may very well be precedent. It is a law though, and it should have been abided by. And that's absolutely, like, it is behavior that should be condemned, but there's a slight kind of, you know, fever in the air, which can be, it can make it a little bit murky, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that they are bringing this constitutional challenge, which can't be heard until they've actually been released, which is interesting as to why they would want to continue with this particular thing, given as well that they presumably don't have the money to carry on with the case, which would make you wonder if others are going to fund it. Anyway, we leave it there for the time being on that particular issue. Caitlin, I want to ask you about Khloe Kardashian and a photograph that appeared online of her this week, which she hasn't been happy about. Tell us about this.
Yes, a photo appeared on Instagram earlier this week. It was a behind the scenes shot of her promoting a new swimwear campaign. And we're used to seeing pictures of all the Kardashians, but in particularly Khloe, heavily edited. And this was her in her natural state. And she looks absolutely beautiful. She looks strong. She looks healthy. She looks toned. But she was unfiltered. She was unedited. And she was clearly very uncomfortable with that. Now, what's sad about this and the way that the story has progressed is, you know, people, it kind of had that Streisand effect because she didn't like that picture and tried to have it removed from the internet. And so in contrast, actually wound up drawing even more attention to it. So people who probably wouldn't have even heard of this, that this picture was circulating, are now searching desperately to find it. And what's sad about this is over the course of a few days, people were, you know, either praising her or condemning her. And what's sad is that kind of, I suppose Khloe is as much, I'm reluctant to use the word victim, but she's as much susceptible to this kind of unrealistic image that the Kardashians have set themselves. But Kardashians have also profited. You can hear my internal seesaw as to where I feel about this, because my initial instinct is to say, you know, don't talk about anyone's bodies, just leave them to it. But then you have to remember that the Kardashians are making an absolute fortune. Earlier this week, it was announced that Kim is now a billionaire. And that is a fortune amassed through...
And Caitlin, can I say it as sort of discreetly as possible? It was a certain video that went on the internet of Kim and a boyfriend at the time, which made her famous, wasn't it? She didn't worry too much about that leaked, unedited video.
That's a very discreet way of describing it. But that was also many years ago. So now the Kardashians are around. The evolution of the Kardashians over the last 10 plus years has changed not only their family, but kind of pop culture as we know it. And they are so carefully curated with how they present themselves in order to, you know, create, build their brand and essentially make money. And what's interesting now is, of course, in lockdown, we're not seeing any paparazzi pictures. We're not seeing anybody in their real state, in their natural state. All we're seeing is these overly edited, overly photoshopped images. And so we've kind of come to expect that as normal. So when you see a picture of someone who you haven't seen their real face in probably over a year, you're kind of taken aback. But she released a statement and she said afterwards that she found that the constant ridicule and judgment her entire life to meet other people's standards, she said she found it almost unbearable, questioning of whether or not their father, Robert Kardashian, was her father because she looked different than her sisters. She'd always been referred to as the fat and the ugly sister. And that's what I was saying earlier, is that she's kind of as much, you know, as I said, reluctant to use the word victim in this as much as anyone. And, you know, any young woman who's following the Kardashians and thinking that these are realistic standards of beauty, which they're not. It's achieved through plastic surgery. It is achieved through heavy filtering, and filtering is being the polite way. It's airbrushing, it's photoshopping, it's making yourself unrecognizable. And it's part of, it's a symptom of a much larger issue. But it's just one that I can't make a hard stance on. I mean, she also had a show called Revenge Body. So she brings a lot of attention to her physical figure because she famously lost a lot of weight and became very
sounds to me
fit.
A little bit like she wants her cake and eating it. Dave Hanratty, let's move on to something else. Jedward attacking Simon Cowell, who you could say made them by putting them onto X Factor. What's their beef with him?
Oh, man, Jedward, where to even begin? What a fascinating thing that they are these days. Jedward, they're almost like a living meme, essentially. They almost seem to just live exclusively on social media. And they've almost, you know, they've really turned into this kind of right on fight the power duo. They have hit out Simon Cowell. They've called him nothing but a bad facelift. So once again, we're seeing these kind of slings and arrows about image doing the rounds. This is in a series of explosive tweets.
Sorry, hold on. Is that all right? I mean, you couldn't say that about a woman. So why is it acceptable to say it about a man?
That's a fair point. I don't think it is all right. I think, you know, Simon Cowell, he might be worth tons and tons of money and he might be someone who is taking advantage of artists in the industry. But yeah, I'd rather leave the image out of it if it was me. But at the same time, you're right. I mean, like, there are double standards across the board in the industry. And I think in the case of Jedward, I mean, their personalities are so exuberant. They're so kind of vibrant. They're in your face. And they're using their Twitter account in the last few months, or, you know, my kind of cynical conspiracy theory is that someone else is tweeting for them. It wouldn't be surprising to me if they had an agency involved. But they've gone after Simon Cowell. They've gone after the X Factor. And they've said that their biggest regret in life was not telling the judges on the show where to go, essentially, when they were on it, and that they were paid nothing. Others made millions. Artists are being taken advantage of. They said that, you know, if the time for silence is over, we have to try and expose now how pop acts in particular are treated. And in fairness, like, the industry, the music industry, for many, many years has been called out as a very corrosive machine, one that can harm the individuals, one that doesn't look after people's mental health. It's a conversation that is ongoing, no matter what genre you're in or whatever. But yeah, Simon Cowell, the pop world, it's huge. The X Factor, massive reality show, massive entertainment show. There's so much pressure in there. It's good to hear someone like Jedward come out and kind of say, right, no more, we're going to pull the curtain back and maybe we can make some changes. But like I say, with Jedward, I don't know, like I say, they're kind of right on persona. I think it's an amazing kind of marketing campaign they've been on for the last couple of years because everyone's talking about them all the time. And even just today, they put up a glowing tribute to Prince Philip, and then people responded being like, lads, really? And then they kind of deleted that tweet, put up a different one. It's all very kind of stage managed as well. They seem like good guys. I like them. And they're right about the industry being a bit of a horrible place. But I kind of take everything they do with a bit of pinch of salt, you know?
One listener says, why are these contributors feeling sorry for the Dubai 2? They broke the law while the rest of us are complying to the rules. They should have quarantined. Then they wouldn't have been in the newspapers. And the majority of texts coming in very much along those lines. Caitlin, tell us about the photograph of Imelda May, which apparently caused some people offence.
It did. In promotional imagery for her upcoming album, 11 Past the Hour, Imelda May posed on a wagon and she shared the picture on Twitter, to which she received a lot of controversy, particularly from members of the travelling community. A woman called Rosemary Motton, who is a human rights activist and she's an accommodation policy officer with the Irish Traveller Movement, responded saying, "Are you an Irish traveller? Great to see the love for your pic. Heartbreaking to feel the oppression I feel." to which Imelda responded, saying that her grandmother said that there was Romany Gypsy blood in their bloodline. And they kind of had this exchange of, I suppose, Imelda sharing pieces of her heritage and, I suppose, defending allegations of appropriation. And I think for a lot of people, because Imelda May, of course, last year during the Black Lives Matter movement, wrote the powerful poem, "You Don't Get to Be Irish and Be Racist." And so she is very considered very well regarded, especially when it comes to equality and marginalized people. And so this led to a controversial conversation between the two. But I think ultimately it became clear that she did not intend to cause any offense with the picture, or there was no intention of, or at least intention of, appropriation.
Okay, Dave Hanray, what do you make of this? Because I would have thought that this was a show of support, that there certainly would have been no offense actually meant, and I'm not sure how offense could have been taken.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be like a show of support, absolutely, and it seems that Imelda May is very kind of, you know, well-intentioned in her intentions. However, I think ultimately, if someone from a background that's different to yours, particularly a marginalized background, if they come to you and they say, "This hurts me for whatever reason," I think, you know, you should probably hear them out, you know, and just hear what they have to say. And hopefully a conversation can come from that and things can be learned. I think she's very well respected, Imelda May, for beyond her music. You know, I mean, at the same time, though, Caitlin mentions that poem she wrote last summer, which was very quickly kind of brought onto the Black Lives Matter movement. While it was obviously, again, very well intentioned and great work, there's a slight kind of weirdness I would have with regards to like Imelda May then being the face of this, when it's like, why not a Black Irish poet, perhaps? Maybe that's another conversation you could have. So yeah, I think it's not really up for us to decide, I mean, you know, if you know, this kind of community is offended or not, if we're not from the community. And I'm sure Imelda has taken it on in the right fashion. I mean, to me, seeing the image was kind of like, oh, well, that doesn't mean much to me, she's just sitting on a wagon. But to somebody else, it certainly does, and it opens up those conversations. So you have to kind of respect that, I think.
Okay, and then, of course, mentioning Black Lives Matter, we have been following the George Floyd trial here with Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas. And the case has certainly been developed very strongly by the prosecution. And I see, Caitlin, that there was an Irish doctor made a very significant intervention, it would seem, yesterday.
Yeah, Dr. Martin Tobin, he's from Kilkenny, graduate of UCD and Trinity, and also a world-leading pulmonologist. And he came with some very convincing testimony as a witness for the prosecution, saying conclusively that George Floyd died from a lack of oxygen. And this was in direct response to defense's case and their argument that somehow drugs were somehow a cause of his death, which, I mean, anyone who watched that video last year would know. But obviously it's playing through the courts as it should. And he has kind of, he came to the fore, and I was watching the footage of him speaking to the court earlier, and he details this obviously very complicated medical, you know, jargon, so to speak, in a very real way, to which the jury seemed to respond very well. And he did say uncommittedly that he died as a result of having that officer's knee on his back. And he added to the fact that it wasn't just the knee on his neck. He died from a lack of oxygen, but then also contributed, it was the excessive use of force. And then it really contributed to the prosecution's strength of the case that they're taking against them.
Of course, we have to hear the defences yet, but Dave Hanratty, I'm sure an awful lot of people here in Ireland who were distressed by the story of the Jason Corbett murder must be looking at the extraordinary release of Thomas and Molly Martins and those who were found guilty of his murder and who now may be going to get a plea deal for a lesser charge of manslaughter. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, Matt, this is a story that continues to make headlines, and it was quite surprising to some people this week. Molly and Thomas Martins, who were, of course, were convicted of the murder of Jason Corbett, which took place in 2015, they were convicted in 2017, are now out of jail, on bail, $200,000 bail, pending a retrial, but they may very well be offered a plea deal in the meantime, which essentially would mean that they would plead guilty to probably lesser offences in order to make the whole thing kind of go away and be free, essentially. It looks like a retrial, if it does go ahead, won't happen until next year. And the reason that the court has put this situation together is that they have ruled that evidence, including testimony from Jason Corbett's two children, should have been included in the original trial, but wasn't. And as a result, the whole thing has to be poured all over again. And it's interesting to kind of see the divisiveness here. I mean, if you read some American publications, I read a very long article on Elle magazine there a few hours ago. There are a lot of people who are absolutely positing that Molly Martins and Thomas Martins are victims and should be released. Whereas, of course, in Ireland, you're going to see a lot of people very much rallying for Jason Corbyn, probably. So it's a very complex story, and it's one that we did kind of, I guess, experience, you know, vicariously that way a few years ago, and it's kind of coming up again. Jason Corbyn's family, of course, have released a statement denouncing this and saying that they will challenge it to the full extent, and that his children will get to speak and they will actually speak on his behalf and in his defence. So it's one to keep an eye on, but it could also very much never go back to trial. It could just be a very simple case of a deal happening and that's the end of it. But I can't imagine we're going to hear the end of it for a very long time.
Dave Hanratty from No Encore Podcast and Caitlin McBride, thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.